Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When there are an infinite amount of female struggles, you decide to do a podcast about them. I'm Emma Jo, Real Davis, and in each episode of this podcast, I take a subject by the horns and rip it to shreds. This is the podcast that isn't afraid to talk about any struggle you've had as a woman, from struggling with your body image.
You do get some people commenting, saying, like, you look like a man and women shouldn't look like this. And actually, I love it when I've got a six pack.
To wondering whether marriage is the right thing for you.
To say that I'm committing myself to you for the rest of my life until my last breath, that just seems like a really stupid thing to say.
To even having a cervical smear test.
I need to take my trousers and my knickers off.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Let me know if it hurts. And that's it, done.
Oh my gosh, is that it? I'm in shock at how easy it was.
This is The Female Struggle Is Real. And welcome to another episode of The Female Struggle Is Real. Now, whether you're a regular listener or you're new to the podcast, thank you so much for joining me to discuss a global struggle and its effects on women that I am desperately trying to get my head around. This is The Female Struggle with Climate Change. I'm not going to lie, I don't really know where to start, to be honest. The issue is so overwhelming. I almost actually decided not to do a podcast episode on climate change because there is just so much to cover. But then I thought, well, no struggle lessons from not talking about it. So, like every problem, it's best broken down into smaller chunks. Here's what's coming up in today's podcast. I go along to one of Extinction Rebellion's biggest protests on Waterloo Bridge.
We've just been informed by police that if we don't move from the bridge, according to Section 14, we could be arrested. We've refrained from leaving the bridge at the moment because approaching the bridge from the north side of the river is about 300 people, a drumming band. Banners are just like lighting up the sky. So at the moment, I think we're going to stay here.
I speak to Indy, Mila and Eve, Year 7 girls that I met on a bus while they were on their way back from a climate march, about why they're so passionate about the issue.
Every time you go on this climate march, the more you still say the chants, you actually think, what am I saying? Because it's real, you know, it's not just something that's like, you know, just pretend, it's actually a real thing, and you're fighting for, you know, potentially someone's life and for the planet, and it's more than just people, it's animals and it's the planet, so it's really important.
And I get the facts about the climate crisis and its effects on women from climate scientist at the University of Oxford, Dr. Michelle Kane.
You know, although I would respect any woman's choice to do whatever they want with regards to having children, it's not as clear as we have to stop having children. I mean, I think that's a completely wrong-headed argument.
Now, as I'm sure you're aware, global warming has become such a serious problem, it's being dubbed a climate emergency. You only have to switch on the news or watch a David Attenborough documentary to be startled into a realisation of how serious the issue is. But it's only been in the last few years that it's really come to our attention. Now, this is arguably partially down to global environmental group Extinction Rebellion, who hit the front pages when they staged protests such as naked activists disrupting debates in Parliament, or the controversial incident of exile activists jumping on a tube train's roof to stop commuters from getting to work. I went along to one of the bigger protests that Extinction Rebellion held and visited Waterloo Bridge, one of four sites they occupied in central London.
It's a boiling hot bank holiday weekend in April. Also, I think I should add, a worryingly hot bank holiday weekend. I've come down to Waterloo Bridge in central London, where campaign group Extinction Rebellion are holding a non-violent protest about climate change. There are chalk paintings all over the floor, plants and trees line both sides of the bridge, and the smell of free vegan curries is currently washing over me. As you can probably hear in the background, there are about 300 people coming from the north side of the river with a drumming band, so I'm going to check out what's going on. The atmosphere is much like a festival. As you can hear, there are ukuleles playing, everyone is topless, there are tents set up all over the bridge, there are drumming bands with everyone in brightly coloured outfits smoking joints. I'm currently still on Waterloo Bridge. It's kind of late afternoon, about 4:45, and we've just been informed by police that if we don't move from the bridge, according to Section 14, we could be arrested. We've refrained from leaving the bridge at the moment because approaching the bridge from the north side of the river is about 300 people, a drumming band. Banners are just like lighting up the sky. So at the moment, I think we're going to stay here, see what happens. Obviously, we don't intend on getting arrested, but it's all part of it, isn't it? It's all part of the protest.
Love and respect.
Peace, love and respect. Peace, love and respect.
So if that doesn't work, if you need a bit more welly, is to still do the universal stop position and then chant, "We're non-violent, how about you?"
So what's your name?
My name is Sophia.
And why have you got involved with Extinction Rebellion?
So I first joined Extinction Rebellion for the bridge protests in October, when we blocked the five bridges of London. I have got involved because I am afraid of the future. I'm afraid that the government, and in fact every political leadership in the world, is not taking enough action on climate change, and they have known the facts for 30 years and still not enough is being done. I have a 3-year-old son and a 13-year-old son, and I am afraid for their future. I'm afraid for mine, because things are already changing very fast. We're seeing floods, superstorms across the world. We could reach a tipping point in the next 10 years.
How did you initially get involved with Extinction Rebellion?
It was through social media that I initially became involved. Through posts on social media. But the big step for me was the bridge protest, which was when I started to talk to people who felt similarly to me. So for me, it was about really important that a community comes together, starts to actually grieve together, starts to think of solutions, starts to put pressure on the people who aren't doing enough. And that first protest was enough for me to, you know, to light the fire in me that this is the right approach to dealing with this problem, given the amount of time that has been wasted already.
So let's talk about Extinction Rebellion's sort of key aims. What are you actually hoping to achieve with this particular protest?
So with this particular protest, we want the the government to start talking about climate change, start telling the truth, which means start talking about the science that we've been fed for so many years, and actually tell the general public what's happening and what is likely to happen in places like London.
What is likely to happen in places like London?
We're going to see flooding. We're going to see flooding, particularly around parts of the UK that are low level at the moment. Yeah.
Hello.
You're thirsty.
Do you want to get it? That's fine, don't worry.
You've been here every day.
Really? You've been here every day? Yeah. What's been your favourite bit?
It's
thirsty. It's very hot.
It is very hot. It's worrying.
Yeah, worryingly hot. I know. I thought the same. Sorry, as you were saying, the flooding in London.
I'd rather not talk about that because I want to have the facts all right, but they're all out there.
Can you tell us a little bit about what Extinction Rebellion actually is, where it all started?
So it began with a number of academics and scientists who had been active for many years on climate change, one of whom has done a very thorough PhD on methods of protest, looking at different movements throughout history that have been effective.
I assume as well, having, like you mentioned, you have children, yeah. You must be so worried for their future.
Yeah, I'm terrified for my kids' future. I mean, the reality is so frightening. It's hard to be in it all the time. In order for my brain to function, I sometimes have to step out of the reality and just do the daily things that I'm expected to do as a mother. But when I'm in the reality, I'm grieving, I'm crying, I'm looking at my children and wondering what kind of life they're going to have. You know, they're not going to be able to experience the same things I did. They're not going to be able to see the same natural diversity that I have experienced as a child.
One of the criticisms of the campaign is that there's not a diverse representation of people, specifically people of colour, working class people, and obviously they're the ones that are going to be affected the most. How would you sort of go about changing this?
I think the methods of Extinction Rebellion, they've tried to be as inclusive as possible. I don't think it is possible to gather everyone's attention and have everyone on side for this. I think everyone is at a different stage of the journey of realization of the reality that we're facing. I don't think it's necessary for... we invite everyone here. There's no one being turned away. But I realise people who are working 12 hours a day are not, you know, feeling the pressure, are not going to be able to join. And a message to them is that we are doing this for everyone who can't be here.
Well, Sophia, thank you so much. Best of luck with the protest.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for talking.
Typically, you can consider the industry to render me what? Well, consider a ready reply. Steady on, because the thing is in my mind, it is a reason to remind you.
It's now 8 o'clock and I'm still on Waterloo Bridge, just walking under an archway of willow that has been put behind the barriers on the bridge. And as you can probably hear, the atmosphere is still going strong. Honestly, I mean, if there's one thing you can say about Extinction Rebellion, it's that a lot of the campaigners have so much energy, which is absolutely wonderful. So many people are actually camping out tonight on Waterloo Bridge. I myself am going to go home to the comfort of my own bed, but I just hope that something comes from this protest. Extinction Rebellion certainly get a mixed response from both the press and the public, and I myself have mixed views on their protesting methods. I think there are a lot of valid arguments that question whether they are going about things in the right way. I mean, for example, considering that London is an incredibly multicultural city, the protests that I went to weren't particularly diverse, and there certainly wasn't a true representation of black and minority ethnic people, let alone women, in attendance. But having said that, we are now talking about climate change far more than we were before, and I think that is definitely down to environmental activist groups such as Extinction Rebellion. Talking of protesting, 15-year-old Greta Thunberg is now a household name worldwide. The Swedish activist stopped going to school on Fridays for 3 weeks, a movement known as Fridays for Future, to protest against the lack of action on the climate crisis. Through social media, she encouraged children worldwide to do the same, creating a movement of young activists campaigning for action against climate change. One Friday, I met Year 7 girls, Indy, Mila and Eve, on a bus when they were on their way back from a climate march. So I caught up with them a few weeks later about why they'd been missing school to campaign.
So, Eve, Indy and Mila, so, so lovely to meet you guys properly, because obviously we met on the bus really, really briefly when you came back from the last climate change march. Yeah. Obviously you'd missed school to be there and you've just been at another march today. So how was it?
It was good. I think it wasn't as busy as the last one, and we went like a different route where there were more cars, so you could like say to them to like turn their engines off and stuff like that. It was really fun.
What sort of response did you get when you were saying that to people?
Some of them like kind of laughed or like just smiled, but like others were like, it's electric or like something like that.
Oh really?
Yeah.
And Eve, tell me a little bit about how you kind of came about getting involved with going on these marches.
To be honest, it's really weird because a lot of parents wouldn't think about it this way, but really social media, because it's like so one person just gets it from you know, Greta Thunberg. She's like organized everything, and she, you know, one person got it from her and they just gradually share it. So you just see it on everyone's story, like, does anyone want to go to the march? And then you just look into it and you get interested and then you want to start, you know, doing it.
So I guess you kind of, one of you will see it maybe on social media, like you said, and then you'll go to school and you'll be like, right,
yeah,
guys, I feel really passionately about this and stuff. Absolutely. Oh, that's amazing. And Indy, why do you feel so strongly about climate change?
I feel like not many people like know what it is or like realise how, like what an impact it might do, or it is going to do to us. So I feel like, I think like just one person going on a march just makes a really big difference.
And I don't want to like focus obviously too much on like how old you are, but obviously you guys are still at school. Would you mind telling me how old you all are?
Yeah, I'm 11, but my birthday's in July.
12 in July.
I'm 12. Yeah, same as we're 12.
So you're in year 8?
7.
Okay, cool. So just started secondary school.
Yeah.
Why do you think it is so important, Eve, that young people are at the forefront of this amazing movement?
Because it goes two ways. I mean, some people won't listen to young people, but a lot of people will start to think if it's it's just repeating, and if young people repeat what they're doing, it just tends to get heard. And I think the fact that young people are doing it shows that we actually care and we do want to look after environment. And you know, just the banners, if they say something like Mila said, what did you say?
Mine said, you'll die of old age, we'll die of climate change.
And my dad was saying that really quite frightened me, like he actually thought that it frightened him. And I think having young people say it and showing that they actually care and they've actually looked into what climate change is, it really shows that you know, that it is real and that you should change and have an impact.
Would you say you guys are frightened of what could happen?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I definitely wasn't before, but then, you know, every time you go on this climate march, the more you still say the chants, you actually think, what am I saying? Because it's real, you know, it's not just something that's like, you know, just pretend, it's actually a real thing, and you're fighting for, you know, potentially someone's life and for the planet, and it's more than just people, it's animals and it's the planet, so it's really important.
So what about your school, Indy? Have they been really supportive with you going to the marches?
Well, some teachers, especially like geography teachers, have been really encouraging about it, but others are like, you know, it's just like a waste of your like education that you come to school to like be educated, you know. Come, but then some of them are like, yeah, like go, but then they also carry around like plastic water bottles, and it's just like, then why, if you want to make a difference, then like make a difference, like get a water bottle that you can refill, like make a difference.
Do you think, Mila, that it's significant that obviously, as you mentioned, the movement is being led by Greta, is it Thunberg?
Yeah.
Or Thunberg? I never know how to pronounce it. Because obviously she is, I mean, I don't want to do her a disservice, but she is a teenage girl.
Yeah.
Do you think that's significant?
I think, well, she's doing something really good. So like, because she's doing something good, like, she kind of deserves to miss school. Although she's missing school, she's doing something good for the environment, and I support that. Yeah.
Eve, do you find it sort of more inspiring that it is led by a girl who's a few years older than you?
Yeah, because although obviously it's about climate change and we're not focusing on, you know, feminism, but it just shows how, you know, everything sort of links together that climate change can link to another like problem that we have, or a problem that we're sort of solving. And it's sort of historical as well, because there are so many, you know, historical women who have, you know, done protests and done really amazing things. So I think it's really sort of great, and it's sort of, it's showing that we're changing as like a society and a community, and that women like have the right to speak up, not just about feminism but about other important stuff like climate change.
What are you most worried about for the future, Indy?
I think just like our future. Like, I don't think they understand that they're ruining our future. Like, someone told me that their grandparents said, like, oh, I'm gonna die soon, I don't care. Like, it's just like they need to like stop being like selfish and look into the young people's like point of view and realize that they're ruining our future.
And what are you guys, I know it's obviously really difficult, but what are you guys doing on a kind of personal level to stop climate change as much as possible, be as sustainable as possible?
I carry around like a reusable bottle, and like, so usually if I see plastic on the floor, like sometimes, well, yesterday I saw some wrapping in the road, so I went into the road and I got it and put it in the bin, and I think like even that would make a big difference.
After half term, my friends might do it with me, but I know it's just a week, but I come from, you know, not a very vegetarian family, and I'm just going to go vegetarian for a week, and I think I'll do sort of, you know, every other week. And I'm not saying, you know, it's not the most amazing thing that you can do, but I just think not only does it make a difference, you know, whether it's a small difference, but it makes some difference to the world, but it also makes you feel better about yourself, and the more you do things that make you feel better about yourself, the more you want to do those things. Yes. So the more I'll feel empowered to do better things for the world.
And what about you, Indy?
Well, I try being a white meat pescatarian for a bit, and then, so my family were also like we're like, okay, well, we'll try some new things. Like, when we had spaghetti bolognese, we tried, like, corn instead of like meat, and then we realized that we prefer corn, so every time we have spaghetti we choose corn, because like it's better for the environment and it's better for us.
A lot of people say you know, the UK generally are doing quite a lot to try and combat climate change, whereas obviously there are a lot of countries around the world that aren't and are much worse than the UK. And so a lot of people say, oh, there's no point, what's the point in buying a reusable water bottle, you know, what's the point in becoming a vegetarian? What would you guys say to people who have that attitude?
I think they should think differently, because even just throwing like that wrapper, for example, on the floor, it could potentially do something really bad. And like, just doing one little thing which you think won't do any harm, it honestly will.
And Eve, are you guys going to carry on protesting, going to the marches?
Definitely. Not only, you know, it makes you feel sort of empowered and great, they're fun, and people think that, you know, they're only doing it because it's fun, but we do feel great after we've done it. We all feel really good that we've done it, and like great people. So definitely, I think for all of us, we're definitely going to keep on doing it.
Well, I personally find what you guys are doing absolutely amazing, really inspiring as well, and I just hope it inspires a whole new load of people to get involved, and hopefully the government will finally take action.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
To think that Indy, Mila and Eve are going to spend most of their adult lives on a very different planet is a really terrifying thought. So let's definitely support them and every other school child who is missing out on their education to protest against the lack of action on the climate crisis. Now, you heard me asking them what they're each doing on a personal level to try and reverse climate change and plastic pollution. But I realise it is a very overwhelming thing to think about, and it can be confusing to research the problem as well and try and cement the facts. Dr. Michelle Kane is a science and policy research associate at the University of Oxford, and she joins me now. How are you, Michelle?
I'm good, thanks.
Good, good to hear it. Now, obviously, we're here to talk about climate change. Now, I think the first thing to address is obviously when people say climate change, what do they actually mean? Like, what are they talking about exactly?
Simply, it's that the temperature of the atmosphere has been rising. And so now we're about 1 degree higher than we used to be before we started burning fossil fuels.
What is the biggest cause of climate change? What is actually doing this?
The number one cause is carbon dioxide being added to the atmosphere from fossil fuels. It really is as simple as that as well.
Really? Okay, right. Oh my gosh. Okay. And so obviously carbon dioxide comes from not just us humans, but many other things as well. What is it specifically that, say, humans are doing that is causing climate change?
Yeah, you're right. There is carbon dioxide in the atmosphere anyway, and it had kept that temperature at a relatively stable level for many tens of thousands of years. But just recently, since we've been starting to burn fossil fuels since the Industrial Revolution, the amount of CO2, carbon dioxide, in the atmosphere has gone up dramatically, and that is what's pushed temperatures up very, very rapidly, completely unprecedented in the history of the world, really. It is being taken up into the oceans and into plants, but not nearly as fast as it's being added to the atmosphere.
And what does it actually mean for the planet? Like, what could actually happen? You know, it's all very well us sort of sitting here talking about, you know, rising sea levels and, yeah, obviously the temperature of the Earth increasing. But what could actually happen?
When the temperature rises, there's impact for what animals and plants can live happily, not least ourselves. So if temperatures are increasing, different plants and animals won't be able to survive as well. You mentioned sea level rise, so that means that all the coastal cities will be at risk, especially if they're not adequately protected from flooding. It means that not only could we have more droughts, we could actually have more heavy rain, hurricanes. Really, the list goes on and on. You know, you could talk about coral reefs, you could talk about endangered species that are being squeezed out of their habitats. You know, whatever you could think of, it will probably be affected by climate change.
So obviously, I mean, I'm sure that a lot of people agree that it's an incredibly serious problem that needs drastic action. But how can it directly affect us? You know, for say the average person at home that hasn't got a particularly great interest in climate change or an awareness of what is going on, you hear a lot about, you know, like I said, the rising sea levels, etc. But how is that actually going to affect my life on a personal level?
There are some ways that it might already have affected you. We've had more heat waves in recent years, and they're even hotter than they would be without climate change. And actually, heat waves in this country, we might think, oh, it's a nice, you know, we're having a good summer. But actually, it leads to a lot of deaths, excess mortality. And actually, you know, the 2003 heat wave, there was estimated up to 70,000 people dying in Europe after that heat wave, which was a completely unprecedented heat wave.
Do you think it's a fair argument to say that globally climate change is going to affect women more than men?
On the whole, I think studies have shown that yes, it does. And partly that's just because women are more susceptible to poverty, because globally there are higher numbers of women who are reliant on natural resources, like going to collect water from natural sources, and these people who are living in those kind of conditions will actually be affected first. And the more affluent you are, the less likely you are to be immediately affected by the earlier stages of climate change.
Another argument, of course, is that we should be slowing the population rate. And there are groups such as birth strikers, who are basically groups of women that are refusing to have children to slow climate change. Do you think there's more of a societal pressure on women to fight climate change?
That is a tricky one. I'm not sure if there's been research to show that or not, but certainly anything to do with reproduction seems to fall more heavily on women than men. Although on the population growth, the people who have the most children have the lowest footprint on the earth. So typically, as you become more affluent, you have fewer children if you look at global figures, but you also get a larger and larger carbon footprint. So it's actually the richest people who have the fewest children and have the biggest impact on climate change. You know, although I would respect any woman's choice to do whatever they want with regards to having children, it's not as clear as we have to stop having children. I mean, I think that's a completely wrong-headed argument. And if we have a zero carbon society, if we successfully decarbonize the economy, then we can have children because we won't be having large carbon footprints associated with our lifestyles.
What do you think of activist organisations such as Extinction Rebellion and their protesting methods? Do you think they're making a positive change?
I definitely do think they're making a positive change because in 30 years since the Rio summits, climate scientists have been saying what a problem climate change is. And in fact, even in the 80s, people were saying this. We had science even from the 1970s that was saying that fossil fuels are going to become a problem. And it's only been in the last few years that the IPCC, so that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, published a really seminal report. And then suddenly Extinction Rebellion was on the scene. And really, I think it's only really grabbed the public's attention because of that activism.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, like you've just said yourself, it's been a real struggle for this issue to sort of come to light. And only recently has it been front page news. And that is mainly down to organisations such as Extinction Rebellion. Do you think if there were more senior female politicians and women, say, had a greater influence over global institutions, would climate change be higher up the agenda?
I guess it's hard to say. I suppose things would be a little bit different if that were the case. I mean, back in the 1980s, Margaret Thatcher was actually pretty good on the environment. So she seemed to be very clear and she immediately saw that climate change was an issue. So it would be interesting to think about what history would have been like if politicians who cared about climate change were actually in charge for this whole period.
I think you'll agree that obviously it's an incredibly overwhelming issue. And like, you know, there's even a thing now called climate change anxiety where people are so anxious about it. It's actually sort of turned into almost a health condition. But what can we do on a personal level as individuals to help reverse climate change?
Yeah, I think that's a really important way of thinking about it, actually, because, you know, we've got enough to worry about in some ways and we don't want to do ourselves harm. But at the same time, if no one does anything, we'll be getting the repercussions from that. So I would say that it is important to do something, but something that's within your own capability. Like, it's clear not everyone can go out and buy solar panels and put them on their house. Like, that just is impossible for everyone to do. I think considering what is within your grasp to change is a first step. And then decide what you can do and make these small adjustments to your life. But most important, I think, would be to make a noise about it and either tell your elected officials that you have a strong view on climate change. If it's really expensive for someone to buy an electric car, then not that many people are going to do it. But if the government puts in policies to make that more accessible for more people, then it'll happen. So it's the policy situation that really needs to change so that people can make those decisions. Sometimes you have to choose between, you know, getting your job done, your paid employment done, which might involve getting in a car and driving to work and doing the environmentally better thing. So we need those policies in place to really encourage people to be able to cycle, to avoid doing things that are energy intensive. Individuals just can't do all of it, but the individual's real power is in making sure that the government actually knows that we want change, and then we're not going to let them get away with not changing.
I mean, yeah, it's a really good point that you make, actually, because I feel incredibly guilty every time I get in my car to drive to work, because I work in the middle of an industrial estate, and unfortunately there's just no way of me being able to cycle or walk to work at all. But then at the same time, you know, in other situations I'll always try and get public transport where I can. So like you say, I suppose it's about sort of making a choice, making those small adjustments and doing what we can, I guess.
Exactly. And, you know, I sometimes agonise over do I buy this item that's in plastic, or do I buy that item that's probably going to go off quicker, and then maybe that food will be wasted? You know, which one do I choose? It's really difficult.
I'm glad that you do that as well, because I stand there in the fruit aisle thinking, oh gosh, this item has come from Egypt and this item's come from, you know, Italy, and I'm trying to work out which one is the better, you know, environmentally of the two to buy. And it's just, oh, you just get completely wrapped up and overwhelmed, don't you?
It is almost impossible to know the right answer all the time, actually. And so food miles are a relatively small proportion of the overall footprint for food, actually. But then you have all sorts of different factors, like if you have to grow strawberries in the UK, you might have to heat the tunnels, and that uses energy if it's not a green energy, you know. So you might be burning gas to heat the tunnels for strawberries in the UK, or you import them from Spain where you've got those transport emissions, but you don't have to heat up the tunnels. Like, it's just it's a very complicated system, and sometimes it's just not possible to know the exact answer for absolutely everything.
Yeah, of course. Well, I've got strawberries growing outside in my raised beds using using no heat at the moment. So I'm hoping that's definitely the best option instead of buying them in a supermarket when they've come from Spain or somewhere. So, oh, God knows. I hope I'm doing the right thing. I don't know. But anyway, thank you so much for chatting to me, Michelle. And yes, we'll have to make those small adjustments and continue making noise as well.
Lovely to speak to you.
It is certainly reassuring to hear Dr. Michelle Kane say that she feels overwhelmed visiting a supermarket and not knowing what to do for the best either. And she's a climate scientist. So, I mean, I'm definitely going to try and not get bogged down with the small details. And instead, like she said, make sure I'm talking about it more and contacting my local MP. Also, just to say, I do realise that Egypt is much further away from the UK than Italy. Just wanted to point that out. Now, climate change is undeniably the largest crisis the planet has ever faced. And if you think about it in that way, it does become hugely worrying and overwhelming. We obviously need to understand the severity of the problem and how much effort is going to be to attempt to reverse climate change. But like Michelle said, that must primarily come at an institutional level, because there's nothing that you and I can do on a personal level that's going to really make a drastic impact. Having said that, I mean, Greta Thunberg started out by protesting and posting on Instagram, and think of the changes she's made in the world already. But I suppose that the more we talk about it, the more noise we make, and that can only be a good thing. I do think that making personal changes, however small, will definitely encourage and inspire others to follow suit. This will hopefully help to raise awareness, which in turn will put more pressure on those in power across the world to make the necessary changes that will prevent a global climate change catastrophe. As Dr. Michelle said as well, this issue is going to have a greater impact on women than men. But with young women such as Greta Thunberg at the forefront of this campaign, and girls as well like Mila, Indy and Eve getting involved too, it is so reassuring to see that this movement is women-led. But we just need to make sure that because it's going to affect women from all backgrounds, we find a way of making it as intersectional and as inclusive as possible. Thank you so much to my guests, Sophia, who I spoke to at the Extinction Rebellion protest, Indy, Mila and Eve, and Dr. Michelle Kane for being on the podcast. And thank you as well to you for listening. If you want to get in touch with me and chat about anything I've discussed, you can do by emailing thefemalestruggle@gmail.com or messaging me on Instagram at mjoerealdavies, mjoerealdavies. As always, if you like the podcast, I would so appreciate it if you could review it on your podcast app, share it on social media, or even mention it to a friend. Thank you so much once again for listening, and I'll see you next time on The Female Struggle is Real.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.